אני מקווה שאת תהני. אנחנו ממש נתחיל. We will start and I'm shifting back to English. Excuse me all of those who had to listen to the Hebrew in the past. I'm excited to speak Hebrew whenever I can. You can understand me. You can understand me. Hello, Ricky. Good to see you. Long time no see. Hope everything is well. We will start in a minute. I'll just say that I apologize again for not having a shiur, a class, last week. I flew to Israel. I visited my family. I spent 5 days in Israel. Not so much. It was very, very short, but it was worth it. It's always good to be with mom and dad. That's all. Now we're back on track. And today we're going to have this year. We're going to have tonight our song of the week. Those of you who attend, and those of you who don't attend, please attend. You will enjoy it. Priel, my wife, and I. And on Wednesday evening, we will have our introduction to Jewish philosophy. As usual, tonight it's 7:30. Tonight it's 8 p.m. 7:30 p.m. to 8, excuse me. And on Wednesday, it's going to be on 7. My mind gets time to calculate again the times. I can tell you when it's supposed to be in Israel time, not in Toronto time. Thank you, Leah. Thank you very much. Hello, Gordon. I will resend again in our chat the sources. As usual, I'm not going to share the screen. So you can all open it or print it, as usual. We'll give another 15-20 seconds, and we will roll. Some people are still coming in. Okay. So that we have everything we have. Okay, so let's just go through what we have today. So only one booklet today. This one where it says the round character of Yaakov, the round character of Jacob. We will go through it. There's two pages, both sides. I hope you printed it. If not, you can open it in a new tab. All right, so hello. Everyone, welcome. Good to see you. Welcome to the fourth class of On Parents and Children, a different reading of the book of Genesis. We've been through a lot in this, I think, in this series so far. I think that each class was packed with information, packed with insights, packed with food for thought, which is very, it's good that maybe we had a week off just to digest and unpack some of the things we've gone through. And today, we're going to jump forward. We're going to get to, hello Bonnie, hello Shoshana. We're going to get to Yaakov. We already spoke about Abraham. We spoke about Yitzchak and Ishmael. We spoke last time about Yitzchak and Rivka. If you remember, we said that Rivka in the story is actually the main character and not Yitzchak, that actually Rivka is taking the lead in this, I would say, partnership, in this marriage. We saw she's very active. And we finished our discussion in 2 weeks ago, where we said that Rivka, that started as a very energetic, active young lady, finished as someone that, a wife that fooled her husband. And actually, this is the last event, the last story we are told in the Torah about her, and we don't even know when she passed away, when she died. We don't know anything about her more than that, and she's actually one of the, it's very, very interesting, but she's one of the least mentioned woman characters in the Tanakh, in the Bible in general, which is, not many female characters are mentioned in the Tanakh in general, but among those who are mentioned, Rivka is, she's not in the top three, not in the top four. Also, which is very interesting to think about, again, as comparing it to her very active, energetic, and important role in our forefathers' families. And welcome to Yaakov Avinu, to Yaakov, our forefathers. We are today going to analyze Yaakov and Esav, all right? Again, I'm talking about Yaakov as Jacob. I will try to refer to him as Yaakov, and Esav as Esav. We will go through the different stories in Yaakov's lifetime that the Torah reveals to us, and we'll try, as we do in this series, to analyze a literal analysis of the stories of Yaakov Avinu, and by that maybe get a sense of who exactly is Yaakov Avinu, who are you in this dynasty, in this chain of avot, of forefathers, who is Esav in this game, and what exactly is Yaakov if we compare him to Abraham and if we compare him to Yitzhak. This is what we're going to do today. We're going to do the same thing as we do in every class. We're going to read the stories as we have here. I will resend again in the chat the sources. Let's do it. Here we go. Again, I'm not going to share the screen, so you can open it in a new tab and have it. Here you go. Again, that's all. Okay, but I want to start with actually not the beginning of Yaakov, and you'll understand why in a minute. The first story I want to focus on, it actually one of the last stories that are being told about Yaakov as a person specifically, because he's very much discussed in the Torah. I didn't compare him to Avraham, which is interesting to think. I think he's even more than Avraham Avinu, more than Abraham. But I want to focus, as we begin this class, on one of the most interesting stories that took place in Yaakov's life. And this is the fight Yaakov had with the angel. Now, some of you are probably familiar with this story. Yaakov Avinu, we will talk about it also towards the end of the class. Yaakov Avinu crossed the river back, the Jordan River back, and then he encountered this figure, angel, messenger, very mysterious person, very mysterious figure, and they fight. And let's read the psukim. Let's read the verses. This is the beginning. This is we're going to discuss Bereshit 23, verse 4, until Bereshit 27, verse 2. Again, we will jump and skip some verses that are less relevant to our class. So the fight with the angel starts as follows. That same night he arose, talking about Yaakov, and taking his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons, he crossed the ford of the Jabbok, of the Yabbok, Nachal Yabbok. Sorry, not the Jordan. Yabbok, one of the rivers of the streams in eastern Israel. After taking them across the stream, he sent across all his possessions. And then the Torah tells us that Jacob was left alone, and the figure. Who is this figure? An angel? A messenger? Who is it? And the figure wrestled with him until the break of dawn. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he wrenched Jacob's hip at its socket, so that the socket of his whip was strained, and as he wrestled with him, then he said, "Let me go, for dawn is breaking." But he answered, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Who's he? First of all, we can see that this story is very weird. First of all, what's going on in this story, okay? We will see that the story is being placed, being stationed in the Tanakh, in the Torah, in a place that doesn't makes exactly sense. We're in the climax, we'll see it. We'll be in the climax of an encounter, of almost a war between Esav and Yaakov. And for some reason, the Torah just, you know, sims into the story, this very weird, mysterious story about the angel or this figure wrestling and fighting with Yaakov. Not only that, but look at the words that the Torah is using. We don't know exactly who's saying what, right? He said, "Let me go, for dawn is breaking." But he answered. Who's answering me? Who's questioning me what? And then the Torah reveals. And it says, in verse 28, again, let's read verse 27 again. Then he said, "Let me go, for dawn is breaking." But he answered, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So said the other, "What is your name?" He replied, "Jacob." And the figure said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with divine and human and have prevailed." Jacob asked, "Pray tell me your name." But he said, "You must not ask my name." And he took Liv off him there. It's a very mysterious story, very weird story. What exactly is going on here? Why is he wrestling with a figure? What happened? Why exactly is he saying, "Bless me," and he asked, "What's your name?" He said, "Jacob." And then Jacob receives a new name from this, again, angel or figure. What exactly that is, the commentators try and discuss to, you know, give any kind of interpretation, a clue, a hint of what exactly is going on here. But why do we start this lesson with this story? We start the lesson with this story because the class is called The Round Character of Yaakov. A round character in literature in general is a character that is not static. It's not static. He starts in a way with a character, with skills, with you know, as we say in Hebrew, with Ofi, with, you know, he has his own nature, and then it evolves in a way that he's being changed throughout the stories until he reaches a point where he's very different than where he was, but you can actually see and notice what led to that place, almost like closing a circle. This is around character. And I want to start from the last point of the class and go all the way in circle back to the last. We will finish the class with this story as well. And by that, I will try to demonstrate the round character of Yaakov in the stories and try to see who exactly is Yaakov. What kind of a father, what kind of a son, what kind of a person in that sense. So put that in your mind. We started with the last story that we will revisit towards the end of the class, where Yaakov is being changed. The name of Yaakov, he wrestles, he fights with someone, and his name is changed to Israel because, right, Israel, right? Because you have striven with divine and human and have prevailed. In Hebrew it says, Ki sarita, sarita Israel. The same word, the word Israel comes from the word sarita. Sarita is to strive. But let's go all the way back to the birth of Yaakov. Let's see, who is Yaakov? How was he born? We actually gone through those verses last time, but we focused on Yitzhak and Rivka's role. Now we're going to focus about Yaakov and Esav. Let's read it. So the birth of Yaakov. When her time, talking about Rivka, when her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first one emerged red, like a hairy mantle all over. So they named him Esav. Then his brother emerged, holding on the heel of Esav. So they named him Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when they were born. What is the first thing we know about Yaakov? What is the first thing we know? Anyone? What's the first thing we know about Yaakov?
He's the second one.
He's the second one, right? You remember what we say? We're slowly killing the kindergarten teacher in this class. We know what's going to happen. He's going to buy the birth rate. Wait for that. First of all, we see he is not the first one. The first one is Esav. God made the things as it is, and Esav is the firstborn of Yitzhak and Rivka, not Yaakov. All right? We'll put that in mind. We need to remember that. Yaakov is number two. Yes, Claudette.
And also, even before he was born, he was struggling with Esau.
He was struggling. Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you very much. It's not here in those verses. We spoke about last time that Rivka felt like the two twins in her womb are struggling with each other. Right? They're fighting with each other. So she went and asked God what exactly happened here. Thank you, Claudette, for this wonderful, beautiful note. I actually, maybe I'm going to try and put that a little bit in what we're going to say towards the end. Thank you very much. I haven't thought about it in that way. So in verse 27, it continues. When the boys grew up, Esav became a skillful hunter, a man of the outdoors. But Jacob became a mild man, which in other words says staying in camp, which the commentator is trying to explain what it means. Maybe it says raising livestock. Now, again, what's going on here? We're starting talking about who? Esav. Wait, Yaakov is second. Even in the explanation of the Torah, Esav is being explained first. Esav is a skillful hunter, and Jacob is a mild man. Now, in Hebrew, we use the word ish tam. Tam, tamim, indifference, mild man. In other words, not a very interesting character, right? Not a very interesting character. We have a skillful hunter, and we have this other boy. Right? He stayed in camp, he stayed at home, he's intense. Not only that, because what is the first thing we notice him doing? The first thing he's doing, wait, let's see, verse 28. Isaac favored Esav because he had tzayid befiv. The Torah uses the words tzayid befiv. What exactly is tzayid befiv? The translation would be hunting in his mouth, and the commentators discuss what exactly that means. Maybe he fooled Yitzchak, some say maybe because he fooled Yitzchak, it's like he hunted Yitzchak with his mouth. Some say because he was a hunter and Yitzchak loved the meat that he brought from outside. It doesn't matter for now, but we know for now that Yitzchak is the successor of Abraham. And we know that Yitzchak prefers Esav. Again, Esav is the first one. Not only the first one to be born, he's also the first one that the Torah describes. And he's also the first one that we know that our forefather prefers. That is a certificate, right? This is something that is important. This is something that we know. Okay, for now, us as the readers, we would think that the main character is Esav. He's going to be the successor. He's going to be the forefather. And Yaakov is the secondary character, right? Again, that happens again. Remember what we said about Yitzchak and Ishmael. It happens again. But Rivka favored Yaakov. Rivka favored Jacob. In verse 29, once when Jacob was cooking a stew, it says, Vayazed, Esav came in from the open, famished. What is the first thing we're being told about Yaakov? He's what? He's cooking. What man, what male, in the Tanakh so far, stood in the kitchen and cooked soup? Who do we know that cooked someone? Abraham, when he gets the guests, he sends to Sarah, go and make food, right? Yitzchak and Rivka, we don't know that Yitzchak is cooking. He's digging well in the ground and pit. Yaakov, the first thing we're being told about this person is that he's staying in camp, he's a mild man, the mother prefers him, not the father, not the forefather, and he's cooking a stew. This is very naive. Try to imagine the picture that the Torah is painting. There is a picture, there is an art that the Torah is painting. The brushes for Yaakov are very gentle. He's a very gentle person, very gentle personality. He stays in camp, he's mild, and he's cooking, right? But Esav, he comes in from the open. He hunts, right? He's a hunter. He comes in from the open. He is famished. He's tired. He's exhausted, right? Think about the picture. The brother is cooking in the kitchen, and he's coming with bringing food back home, and he's the active boy from the two. Now look at those four verses, verse 26, 27, 28, and 29. Every each verse of those verses is a compression between Jacob and Esav, right? He emerged, then they grew up. He's a skillful hunter, he's a man he's a mild man. Yitzchak preferred Esav, and Rivka preferred Yaakov. And Yaakov is cooking, Esav is hunting. We have four verses, one after one after one, back to back to back, comparing Esav and Yaakov to each other. This tells us something, folks. This leads us to something. We, as readers and learners, which we don't know yet what's going to happen in the story, the first encounter we have with Yaakov is he's never by himself. He's always compared to his brother, right, on the first hand. Not only that, he's very parv, in a sense, right? We can call him parv. Very parv. Where's the fleshic brother that goes in hunting? Put that in mind. I want to open brackets before we continue with the story of Yaakov. Actually, something that I didn't mean at the first place to put in that class, but I had this thought and I wanted to share it with you. So I said I will include it. It's a bracket that I'm opening. It doesn't relate exactly to the progress of this class, but I want to share it with you. The Torah, when it describes that Yaakov is cooking a stew, it uses the Hebrew word vayazed. You see, I wrote down the Hebrew word also, vayazed. Now, it uses stew in Hebrew is nazid. Nazid is a stew in Hebrew. Now, vayazed would be the verb of preparing a stew. When you prepare a nazid, you are vayazed. That's how it works in Hebrew. The same word. Hebrew is a word, the language works with roots. But actually, you know that if you open the Tanakh, and you look for all the instances where the root Yud, Zayin, Dalet, Yazad, if you look on all the words with that root in the Tanakh, they're actually all, there's 10 places in the Torah. There's 10 places in the Torah where they use this word. 9 of them are negative. 1 of them is cooking. And this is us. Because look what we see. Look for example. Look for an example. Look in the Hebrew one, in number one. I'll read the Hebrew, then the English. In the first instance in Shemot, in Exodus, Ata yadati ki gadol Hashem mikol haElohim ki vadavaz asher zadu alehem. Or in English, now I know that Hashem is greater than all gods because of the matter in which they dealt arrogantly against them. The word zadu is arrogantly against. And look at the other one. Look at number two. V'chi yazid ish al re'eu le'orgo be'orma me'im mizbachit ichkachenu lamut. This is from Exodus 21. If a man schemes and comes on his neighbor with cunning to kill him, you shall take him from my altar that he may die. Look at the third instance. V'chol, this is from Deuteronomy 17. V'chol ha'am ishme'u ve'yira'u ve'lo yezidun od. All the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Again, it's negative. Look at the fourth instance. I didn't bring everything. I brought four instances just for you to see. Deuteronomy 18, one chapter after. Ach hanavi asher yazid ledaber davar bishmi. But the prophet who shall speak a word presumptuously in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, that same prophet shall die. Folks, maybe that's my suggestion. We know, we all know the story that he prepared the stew. He was tired. He came back. He sold his the birthright. Folks, maybe Yaakov, the Torah is painting Yaakov in this story not exactly in positive colors. Maybe when the Torah uses the word vayazid, which of course on first glance makes the verb to prepare a nazid, a stew, but maybe there is another insight. Maybe there's other layers beneath it. Maybe by using the verb vayazid, we are being told that there is also a negative way of perspective in this story. And maybe Esav is not a total the total bad in a sense of this story. Maybe there is a little bit of, you know, also shame and responsibility to Yaakov in this story. Yes, Claudette?
I always thought why Jacob was not open to just helping his brother without having to get something. So now that you're saying it, that this word in Hebrew is telling you that some kind of cunning went on here.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying?
Yeah. Yeah. This word has a lot of negative interpretations, negative meanings. In Hebrew we say zadon. That's another word in Hebrew which comes from the same root, zadon. Right? I see that Ricky is nodding, he doesn't know Hebrew. Zadon means something evil. Zadon is evil. We also have in Halacha a term called mezid. Mezid means on purpose. When someone is doing something on purpose, that means if he's sinning on purpose, he's doing it be mezid. Mezid is doing something wrong on purpose. It's the same root in Hebrew. That's why it's so important when we learn Tanakh also to be exposed to the Hebrew. Because the Hebrew has so many layers underneath it that it's hiding that can open us, the learners, the readers, into different interpretations and different maybe meanings that the simple layers, the simple translation are actually lacking and missing. This is just something I wanted to share with you, but it doesn't relate to our, in general, our progress of the class. I thought it was worthwhile sharing, and that's another food of thought, right, in that sense. Okay, let's continue to the next story that we're being told about Yaakov. Oh, I also brought here a screenshot of a dictionary. You see, this is a Milon, this is a Hebrew dictionary, where they discuss the root of Zud, Zid, the same word in Hebrew. You can see this is here, where they say it means to boil up, right? Like in our story, but also act proudly, see presumptuously, rebelliously. You see, it's very negative meanings to the same word as well. Just for you to see. The next story we're being told after the story of the stew is that Yaakov Avinu is running away. He's running away by the commandment of his mother, Rivka. Rivka is telling him after she switched between Yaakov and Esau was the blessing. We're not going to discuss this today. But Yaakov is running away. He's fleeing. He's running away because Esau wants to kill him because he stole, by the commandment of his mother, he stole the blessing from his father. And look what it says, that when Rivka is sending Yaakov back to her family in Haran, right? She's sending him to Laban. When he's sending him back, then look what the Torah is telling us. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. This is when he flees out. He came upon a certain place and stopped there for the night, for the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of that place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. He had a dream. A ladder was set on the ground and its top reached to the sky, and angels were going up and down on it. It's a very, very familiar story, a very famous dream. The ladder of Jacob. And standing beside him was God, who said, I am God, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. What's going on here? As far as we know, Yaakov's father is not Abraham, right? That's his grandfather. Yaakov's father is Yitzchak. But look, again, read closely. Sometimes when we read it fast, we don't pay attention to that. I am the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. Now Rashi, he noticed that obviously, and he comments, he says that, you know what? That means that the grandfather of a person is also counted as his father. And you all know, if you're a grandparent, you are also educating your grandchildren, right? There's also an educational aspect in being grandparents. But if we start shot-wise, as I like to say, only the simple layer of the text, something is, there's a message we're trying to be conveyed here. Just put that in mind, we'll try to understand what. I am God, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. The ground on which you're lying, I will assign to you and to your offspring. That reminds you something? This bracha, this blessing, what does that remind you? What does that remind you? I see Vanessa is nodding. Vanessa, what is that reminding you?
The blessing that Hashem promised to Abraham.
To who? His father, so-called, right? I mean, we have Abraham, we have Yaakov. Yitzchak is like somewhere in between, but like we skip Yitzchak. And we move from Abraham to Yaakov, right? We usually say Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Yitzchak, we saw the last session. We saw that Yitzchak was kind of a middleman between the generations. This is another proof for that. That Abraham is the main character. Yaakov is the main character. Yitzchak is somewhere in between for many, many reasons. It comes to expression also in the blessings. That he received the same blessing as his grandfather. I will assign to you and to your offspring, your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread the same words actually that he said he told to his grandfather, to Abraham. You shall spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All the families of the earth shall bless themselves by you and your descendants. Remember, I am with you. I will protect you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Now, this is one of the most explicit blessings to God to someone in the Torah. Now, I don't brought it on the sources because it's too much, but just try to recall the relations between Abraham and God, not talking about the relations between Yitzchak and God. Think about it. Yaakov is one of the forefathers that receives the most explicit bracha and blessing, a direct thing from God in the dream. And that's why it's interesting to notice not only what the bracha means, but maybe more than what the bracha, what is this blessing? More, let's focus on Yaakov's response to this bracha, which is fascinating. Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely God is present in this place, and I did not know it. Wait, let's continue reading. Shaken, he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and that is the gateway of heaven. Sha'arei Shamayim. This is the gateway of heaven. Early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He named that site Bethel, but previously the name of the city has been loosed. Let's focus on this unit, and we'll try to see what insight we can understand from that. I think you already know me enough to know where I'm heading to and what exactly is the message I'm trying to convey. So first of all, I want to ask a question. You didn't know it? Really? You're already the grand. You're the son of Yitzchak. You received a blessing just a chapter ago from your father. Just told a blessing from your brother Esav. You are the grandson of Avraham Avinu. You don't know that God exists here? You're surprised that God spoke to you? You're surprised that you received a blessing? Really, Yaakov? What's going on here? What do you think? What's going on here? Is he surprised that God is speaking to him?
You know, it's very interesting that when he said, Yesham Hashem b'makom hazeh, b'manorah makom, makom is also God's name.
Beautiful. Beautiful note. Beautiful. Makom in Hebrew is a place, and it's also another word of God. Beautiful. Beautiful insight, Ruchama. Beautiful. Thank you. Yes, Ricky.
Could it be that Jacob is being shown here as humble, as maybe feeling he doesn't deserve it?
So why do you steal the blessing from your brother if you are so humble and you don't deserve it?
Well, that was his mother's doing.
Okay, but he still did it. Why do you sell the birthright?
Maybe he wasn't completely honest by being humble.
Okay, so you call it humble. I call it in a different way. This is the way I explain. I read this story. You just remember what we said. He's Ishtam Yosef Olim. This is the boy that cooks in the kitchen. And he is almost, I would say, naive, in a sense, right? How we say it in English? Was a mild man, right? This was the word in English. He's a mild man, in a sense, right? Yeah, mild. He's a mild man. So I'm not saying humbled here. I don't know. You might call it humble, but I have difficulties calling it humbled after what happened with the stealing of the bracha. You might call it humbled. I think it's an action of mild. I think he was really surprised. He's Ishtam Yosef Olim. He's cooking and he's a mild person. This is one of the most explicit expressions of Yaakov, the mild person. We were told when he was born that he's a mild. Now we can see that he's a mild man. He's a mild man. Wow, God spoke to me. That is amazing. Surely God is present in this place and I didn't know that. Now we need to understand something, that Yaakov so far, the thing that he's doing, are not really active. Think what he's doing. Again, think about the active-passive thing. He's not passive, in a sense that the verbs that is being taught about him, he's passive, but he's not really doing anything in the story so far. He's everything that happens to him is where? In the tent of his father, in the household. All the stories till now that we've been told about Yaakov are within his camp. He doesn't get out. We don't know anything that happens to him outside. That's another contrary between Esav, who is outside, but Yaakov is an inside. He's Yoshev Olim. He stays in camp, both in his character, but also literally the stories that we're being told so far are only in camp. He is someone inside the house. We need to understand that. And this is the first time we're being told something that happens outside. And he's surprised. He was released free. He flees outside and something happens. Now God for the first time talks to him directly and he says, wow, I didn't know it. He's a mild person. He's a person of house. He's not a person of the outdoors, of the wild, like his brother. He's in the wild now. That's not his nature. That's not where he's supposed to be. Shaken. He was shaken. He said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God and this is the gateway to heaven. The first place, the first time he just fled, he went to sleep, he had a dream, this is the gate of heaven, this is the place of God. This is someone who didn't experience something like that before. This is an amazing scene for him to experience, even though he's the son of Yitzchak and the grandson of Abraham. And how do I know that this changes something and this impacts him? Look, please, on verses 18-19. You see, I highlighted the verbs. Early in the morning, Jacob took the stone he put under the head. He set it up, a pillar, and poured oil on the top. He named one, took, two, put, three, set, four, poured, five, named. Five verbs in two verses. Again, when we count the verbs, if we have a massive, many verbs, masses of verbs, in short, psukim, two psukim, that means He is active. You remember this tool? He's active. That's how we analyze the pasuk, the verse. He is being active now. Something changed in him. This mild person that was like, wow, God is here. I'm shocked. He woke up. He's very, very, very active. And how do I know that he's not only active? How do I know that this story of the dream is a game changer? That from now, that point, Yaakov's character is changed. Look what happens after the dream. Look at the post-dream activity. Then, Jacob lifted up his feet and went to the land of the people of the east. What does it mean to lift up the feet? He just went. Why did the Torah tell us he lifted up his feet? Why? Because, folks, again, to lift up the feet, he walked. No, he lifted the feet. In other words, he was stationed. He was static. He was in place. Spiritually, mentally, physically, name it however you want to name it. But he lifted up his feet and went to the land of the people of the east. This is another literal way of the Torah to convey the message that Yaakov is someone that stays in place, but now starting to move for the first time, he's going out of his nature zone, of his comfort zone. There, before his eyes, was a well in the open. Three flocks of sheep. Look at the first story that we're being told after the dream. The first story, look what happens. There, before his eyes, was a well in the open. Three flocks of sheep were lying there beside it, for the flocks were watered from the well. The stone of the mouth of the well was large. Large means heavy. Yeah? He said, it is still broad daylight, too early to round up the animal. Water the flock and take them to pasture. Why are you not watering? He asked the other shepherd. Why are you not watering the sheep? But they said, the other shepherd, we cannot until all flocks are rounded up. Why? Because we cannot lift it up by ourselves. It's so heavy. We need everyone to come around. Everyone, all the shepherd will come with their flock, and we will lift it all together so we can water our sheep. But look what the Torah tells us. Then the stone is rolled off the mouth of the well, and we water the sheep. While he was still speaking with them, put that in the brackets, Rachel came with her father's flock, for she was its shepherd. Put that in the bracket, we'll get to that in a moment. And when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of his uncle Lavan, and the flock of the daughter of his uncle Lavan, Jacob went up and rolled the stone off the mouth of the well and watered the flock of the daughter of his uncle Lavan. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and broke into tears. This is a fabulous verses, right? This is an amazing verses. Now, wait, let's focus on it. What is the first thing we're being told after the dream? There is the scene, the situation. There is a heavy stone on the mouth of the whale, and no one can lift it up. And here comes this mild man who sits in house, who did nothing. He's not a sub. Remember, he's not a sub, the brother. He's not the hunter. He's not the person who's killing animals outside. He's the one who's cooking a stew. But he is lifting up the stone from the well because he sees Rachel. Now, putting the romantical meaning aside, I see Vanessa is nodding. I see her all smiling. Putting that for a moment aside, the Disney beautiful fairy tale story. Something happens to Yaakov in the dream. He becomes active. He lifts up his feet and went, but the lifting of the feet is not only going. It's mentally changing. He lifted up his soul and went. Something changes in Yaakov. And the first thing we are being told is that he lives. He's becoming so strong. And he lifts up the stone. Now, I don't know if there was once, before my time, I have to tell you. My parents used to watch it. There was for children, it was like a cartoon for children called Popeye. I don't know if you saw that on Canada. Okay, I see some of you are nodding. Popeye, every time he would eat spinach, right, he would become very strong and he could lift everything that happened. This is Popeye. Look what happened. After that, in superpower. Exactly. After the dream is like the spinach of this Popeye, of the superpower. It's a superpower. And he has the muscles now and he just lifts up the stone. Imagine this scene of what happened by the dream. He started as a mild man who stayed only in camp, didn't go outside. he was cooking, was inside the tent. The first thing he goes out, God reveals himself to him. He notices God. He wakes up. He's shaken. And then he says, wow, this is the gateway to heaven. And then he's very active. He's moving. He's pouring. He's building. He's going. He's taking. He's fleeing his feet. He's lifting up the feet. And he's going. And he becomes stronger. Now, I want to focus on another thing in this passage, in verse 10 and 11. Look, if you printed it, if you have it in color, you can see that I highlighted for three times. It's a very, very, very difficult pasuk. And when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of his uncle Laban, and the flock of the daughter of his uncle Laban, Jacob went up and rolled the stone of the mouth of the whale and watered the flock of the daughter of his uncle Laban. We know! The daughter of his uncle Laban. Why are we being told three times that this is the daughter of his uncle Laban? Okay, we don't know who Rachel is. That's fine. We don't know who Rachel is. But okay, we for the first time, then the second, but I don't need a third time. I know she's the daughter of his uncle Laban. We know who Rachel is now. That's fine. Why does the Torah tell us three times the daughter of his uncle Laban? We need to stop and think about it. But we'll see it in a minute. And also look at the verbs again. Very active. He saw, he went, he rolled, he watered, he kissed, and he broke into tears. Six verbs into psukim. This is an active sin. This is an active scene. This is someone who's very excited in that moment. Some would say fall in love. Some would say for other reasons. But this is a very active scene, a very interesting one. And we should focus on. And I want to offer, Debbie's saying, maybe a hint as to what he will be up against. First of all, I think you're right. I think it's more than a hint. I think it's explicit. There is Rachel, but there is Laban. All right? And again, I need to remind you that we already met Laban. When did we meet Laban? Laban. We met him when was Rivka, right? And this is what I want to do now. Because this story of this young man going to the well and meeting the love of his life in the well is actually not original. We already read this story in a different form. We read it about Yitzchak and Rivka. Not Yitzchak. Yitzchak was not present there. But Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, was there. We read it in 2 weeks ago, in the last session. But actually, it's almost the same. Look, I made this table and I want to compare the two stories and maybe to add my insight of why exactly is the daughter of his uncle Levan is being repeated three times. Yes, Ricky.
I'm sorry, does that mean Rachel is the sister of Rivka, or is she in the family? Is she Laban's daughter?
Rachel is Laban's daughter, yes.
And wasn't Rivka Laban's daughter?
No, Rivka was Laban's sister.
Laban's sister, okay.
Rivka is Laban's sister, and Rachel is Laban's daughter. And let's compare the stories. Look what happens in Rivka. In 24:15, the first volume of the table. When Rivka came out with her jar on her shoulder. Look what it tells about Rachel. When his daughter Rachel coming with the flock. There is entrance to the scene. The two girls are entering the scene. On Rivka it says, the maiden was very beautiful and a virgin. On Rachel it says, Rachel was shapely and beautiful. On Rivka it says, he had scarcely finished speaking when Rivka came out with her jar on her shoulder. And Rachel, it says, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's flock, for she was its shepherd. It repeats itself. Look, the same scene happens again. The maiden ran and told all this to her mother's household. And Rachel ran and told her father. Father. Think about it. Laban ran out to the man at the spring, and Laban ran to greet him. We are again in the same scene. We're in the same situation. Almost the same character. Laban is both here and here. There is a well. There is shepherds. There is running. Okay? And we just changed the woman, and we changed the hero, but Laban, the villain, so-called, is still here, and he's still in the picture. And not for no reason. I think...
Is the marriage of first cousins allowed?
Yes, of course. Definitely. Abraham and Sarah were first cousins.
I'm sorry?
Abraham and Sarah were first cousins.
Okay, well, that sometimes doesn't work very well.
You need to remember that back then they didn't have a lot of variety of people on Earth, and probably everyone would be your family in a sense. So there's not really many choice or a variety, a catalog you can choose from. So you met who you could. Yeah, you met who you could. But folks, I want... Yes, Claudette?
I think back then also they used to marry into the family to keep the land and the property.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Again, the family was called a tribe, has a lot of meaning. Inside the family, again, very similar to the way some of the Arabs are living until today, where some of them are still very, very, very common that Arabs are marrying their cousins. Very, very common until today. It's not very healthy, you're right. Sometimes it can cause not very good things with the children, but you're right. But again, I want to say that Lavan is the focusing of this scene, putting aside the very beautiful romantic scene that is going on here. Lavan is here and here in both stories, not for no reason. We are being told as the readers that something bad is going to happen. Something bad is going to happen. And this is the fault of whom? It's the fault of Rivka. Rivka, the one who fooled her husband and told her son, go back to my household. Now we're being told, you should not be so surprised that you fooled her husband. She sends her son back to the household she grew up in. Take a look what's going to happen. The same thing that she did is going to happen to him right now. He fooled. Yaakov and Rivka fooled Yitzchak. Let's look what's going to happen now. And it says, Jacob loved Rachel. So he answered, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter Rachel. Right? Berachel b'tchak tana, for your younger daughter Rachel. Lavan said, better that I give her to you than that I should give her to an outsider. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love to her. Now this is one of the most beautiful, beautiful verses in the Torah. I'm still struggling with myself. Why are we being told that? I mean, what's the meaning of this passage? Just being a very nice, beautiful passage telling us about love. I mean, there's no really, if we believe that every word, every letter, every sentence in the Torah has a meaning, why do I need to know that in his eyes it was only a few days? Why is it important to the story? I don't have an answer. My only answer is that it's just beautiful. Just love, just beautiful. And the Torah, I think, admires love and beauty and romance and relations, in a sense that it writes down this pasuk as well. And now something happens. What I call the boomerang. Why the boomerang? Because we saw that Jacob's character started to change. We saw he, from the, you know, staying in camp, he went outside, outside of his comfort zone. He started to become more active, more strong, more like Esav, in a sense, right? He becomes a little bit like his older brother, Esav. But now something happened. Because that boy who fooled his father with his mother is being fooled by himself. Someone is fooling him. The boomerang is hitting back, right? You throw the boomerang and it goes all the way back to you. And look what the Torah says. Then Jacob said to Lavan, give me my wife, for my time is fulfilled, that I may cohabit with her. And Lavan gathered all the people of the place and made a feast. When evening came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and he cohabited with her. When morning came, there was Leah. So he said to Lavan, what is this you have done to me? I was in your service for Rachel. Why did you fool me? Now, folks, I want to tell you, are any of you surprised that this happened? Any of you surprised that this happened? How is Yaakov surprised? You saw what your mother just did to your father. The same thing that happened to Yitzchak by Yaakov and Rivka themselves happens back to Yaakov. This is the boomerang. And I think that this point, if the dream with the ladder was the beginning of the change, I think something really changes now in Yaakov. Because I think that his experience in Lavan's house changes him completely. The fact that he was fool, the fact that he cannot become, you know, a made man anymore, a mild man anymore. He's being fooled, and he understands he's being fooled. He cannot be innocent anymore. I think something changes. And why? How do we know that something changes? Just because, look at the first story that we're being told right afterwards. The first story, Jacob's response to childless Rachel. When Rachel saw that she had borne Jacob no children, she became envious of her sister. And Rachel said to Jacob, "Give me children or I shall die." And I put Rivka in brackets because this is the same response as Rivka, right? Look at Jacob's response. This is fascinating. Just after he was fooled. Jacob was incensed at Rachel. He was angry at Rachel and said, "Can I take the place of God who has denied you fruit of the womb?" Wait. What's going on? This is not the mild man who is cooking in the kitchen anymore. This is not the same person who stayed in camp and was the son of his mother, and everything that the mother told him to do, he did. This is also not the same person who was so surprised by the presence of God and by God speaking to him. This is a new character. Yaakov was born again in Laban's house. He changed. The character of Yaakov is not flat, is not two-dimensional, it's 3D. Something changes in Yaakov. The round character is becoming, the circle is turning. He's starting from here. And his, if we just compare this, I would say, response of Yaakov to Rachel, try to compare it to the other forefathers. Because every forefather had problem with bringing children, with bringing kids to the world. Which is a very fascinating idea to think about. I think that, I don't know why, we can think about different answers, but what I can do it in this class is just to compare the different responses that every each forefather had. When Sarah could not bear children, what was it, Abraham's response? He waited. He waited again and again. He was promised over. Remember, he was promised over and over and over again until he said, "Okay, God, I'm sorry, but I need my offspring. I need someone." And then he went to Hagar and he brought child from Hagar. But he waited. He trusted God. Yitzhak, when Rivka could not give children, what did they do? They prayed. They just prayed. We learned it 2 weeks ago. Rivka could not give children, so they prayed. And then Rivka goes out and everything is fine. She goes and asks God, why does she have the womb? But they prayed. You're not waiting. You're not talking to God. It's a, I would say, a pair, a couple issue, a couple idea. And both of them are praying. But look what Jacob's response. When it happens again to Rachel, to this Rachel where she loved so much, and it was just like, you know, a few days, those 7 years flew by, like a few days in his eyes, he is angry. But folks, I don't want you to understand me wrong. I don't think he's only angry about Rachel. Maybe he's not angry about Rachel at all. I think that the anger is nonetheless directed towards the skies and heavens. I think his anger is directed towards God. Can I take the place of God who has denied you fruit of the womb? Right? He's not praying. He's not asking. He's not talking to God. He's accusing God for this. Do you think it's me? It's him. What do you want? What do you want from me? That's him. He denied you from the fruit of the womb. And look at her response to that. She said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Consort with her that she may bear on my knees and that through her I too may have children." This is the same advice that Sarah gave Abraham. Folks, Rachel has in her a little bit of Sarah and a little bit of Rivka. Her response to herself is like Rivka, but her response to her husband is like Sarah. She wants to die like Rivka, but she's also pragmatic and practical like Sarah. You can see our matriarchs, both of them, in Rachel. In that sense, which is fascinating to think about it. But we can see that Yaakov, who started as a mild man who stays in camp, he's not this naive, mild man anymore. He's an angry person who is active, who was fooled, who was hurt over and over again. He learned the lesson in life. And how do I know that he learns a lesson? We don't have the time, and I didn't put it on the sources. But look, there is this this event, this occasion between Yaakov and Lavan. Yaakov wanted to rebel again and to return back to Lavan and to fool him and to punish him. And look what the Torah says in chapter 31, verse 20. Now Yaakov fooled Lavan the Aramean by not telling him that he was about to flee. Again, Yaakov is fleeing, and the Torah uses the word fooled again. But now who is fooling who? Now is Yaakov fooling by himself, his uncle, after he was fooled by himself. Now there is no mother to tell him what to do. He's not naive anymore. Now he's taking actions, taking responsibility to his hands, and he's fooling his uncle. And by that, I think that Yaakov's character was changed. And this leads us, folks, to the last part of our class, and this is coming back to where we started. Now let's see the epilogue. Let's go back to the story we started with. Now, we'll go some verses backwards so we can see the background of the story with the angel. Now Yaakov sent messengers on ahead of him to Esav, his brother, in the land of Seir, in the territory of Edom. Yaakov is sending messengers to Esav. Who's the active person? Esav wants to kill Yaakov, but Yaakov takes responsibility. He's the one who decides, I am going to send messengers to Esav, not Esav to me. He changes. That same night he arose and taking his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons, he has a lot of possessions, a lot of properties. He crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After taking them across the stream, he sent across all his possessions. Jacob was left alone. And the figure, again, alone, in the wild. No one with him. This guy who stayed at home the mile, he's alone. And the figure wrestled with him. He's wrestling with someone, this baby that you just said, Claudette, who wrestled in the womb, is wrestling again. But now, not in the cozy womb in his mother's belly, but now he's wrestling out in the wild, in the open, alone, with a figure we don't know. This is the same story. It's a round story. There's a circle in Jacob's life, and we're back to the same point where he started, but now everything is different. He's alone, and he's wrestling with an angel or with someone. And the figure wrestled with him until the break of dawn, when he saw that he had not prevailed against him. He wrenched Jacob's hip at its socket. You remember hip, leg, Jacob, Akev, everything is happening back again. So that the socket of his hip was strained and he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go for dawn is breaking. But he answered, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Said the other, what is your name? He replied, Jacob. The figure said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. Why? For you have striven with divine and human and have prevailed. Folks, there's no Yaakov anymore. Yaakov is gone. Jacob is gone. There is Israel. Israel is a different character. Israel is a different person. Israel is someone else. This story is, again, the birth story of Yaakov and the new person. This is the birth of Israel. Israel is the one who strives with divine and with human and prevails. This is not the mild man who stays in camp anymore. This is not the number two who holds his brother and everything is being done is in the shade of his brother, in the shadow of his brother. No, folks, this is a new person. This is someone who has changed. This is a round character, and now he's not Yaakov anymore, he's Israel, because everything that happened to him, he strives with divine, with man, and prevails. This is a new person, the mild man from camp is gone, welcome to the new person, welcome to the new forefather Israel. But we cannot finish with that, why? Because one verse after it was given a new name, Jacob asked. He was just giving a new name. Why is the Torah again calling him Jacob? Jacob asked, pray tell me your name. But he said, you must not ask my name. And he took leave of him there. I think that the fact that the Torah uses the name Jacob here again tells us that, you know what? That's right. everything we said is correct. Jacob changed. Jacob was reborn as Israel. But this Jacob is not actually gone. The Jacob, the mild man who stayed in camp, is actually still in him. I think that's a lesson for every and each one of us. That, you know, even if we change because of events that happen in our lives, we're still the same child that we were back then. We can just need to find it. And I think that by that, Jacob is asking, tell me your name. This is again the mild man who's asking a name of someone and is being answered in an educational answer by God through this figure. And he said, no, you must not ask my name. Just like a parent saying to a child, no, don't do it. This Israel, again, still with all this wrestling, with all the struggle, with everything that happened, he's still the little Jacob that is inside. And the Torah says, you know what? He's Israel. From now on, he's Israel. We're all called Bnei Israel, not Bnei Yaakov. We're all the sons of Israel because Israel is the forefather, not Yaakov. We need to understand that Israel is the character of a forefather, not the mild man, but the very strong, active warrior as Israel is. But still in Israel, there is Jacob. And still Yaakov is still there.
I find something very interesting after this dream. The connection between Israel and God is a certain covenant. And what does it mean, a covenant? This one, this part has something to do, and this part has something to do. And usually, God says, if you will do, then I will help you. Here, we find something different. Yaakov is putting God. Yaakov said, "Imi yeh Elokim imadi, ushmarani because evrayali leElohim." That's very strange. Usually, God says to us, "If you will bechukotai teshmeu, if you will do."
He is putting conditions to God here.
Pardon me?
He's putting conditions to God here, right? Again, Yaakov is a fascinating character. A fascinating character, and he's not the same. It didn't start the same, it didn't have the same, and we have the round circle. And I think that it's he's fascinating when we think about him compared to Yitzchak, which was very, you know, naive in a sense, and Abraham with everything that happened to him. And I think now that we understand and Abraham...
He puts God in a part that God has to do something for me, then he will be for me.
Exactly. It's a little bit like Abraham, when Abraham said to God... Oh, Chalila lecha ma'asot mishmo. Oy vavay gevald, if you're going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Same thing, because Yaakov and Abraham, Abraham your father, there's a lot of Abraham in Yaakov. Yitzchak is a little bit pushed aside again, because Yaakov was the son of Rachel, and we said that Rachel was the main character between Abraham and Yaakov, where Yitzchak is a little bit on the side. I think it builds up the picture very good, and I think we're actually being, we're not ready and entitled for next week. We're going to wrap everything that we discussed so far in this series with the fifth and last class of On Parents and Children. And we're going to dive into Yosef, Joseph and his brothers. And I promise you, you will see that the last scene, almost the last scene of the book of Genesis is a closure of everything that we spoke so far in this series. And it's actually a message for us to see what our forefathers as parents and our forefathers as children, how these complex and fascinating stories come to life also today in 2022. Thank you very much, all.
That was so interesting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.